Hello and welcome to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, April 25th, 2024, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Fontes Mays says Hamadeh should fork over more than $50,000 for his latest 2022 election challenge. Normally quiet legislative proceedings were anything but last week. U.S. Supreme Court won't take up Kerry Lake's bid to ban ballot counting machines. Inside the private company Maricopa County depends on to power through the last-minute ballot slog. And let's get started. Fontes Mays said Hamadeh should fork over more than $50,000 for his latest 2022 election challenge, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, April 22, 2024. Republican Abraham Hamadeh should be fined more than $50,000 for filing a groundless lawsuit to overturn his 2022 defeat, say Attorney General Chris Mays and Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, who were forced to go to court to defend the election results. In December, Hamadeh filed a writ of quo warranto, hoping to convince a court that Mays should be removed from office and that he should be installed as the state's top attorney instead. The writ was the latest in a string of failed challenges pushed by Hamadeh since he lost the attorney general's race by just 280 votes nearly 2 years ago. Maricopa Superior Court Judge Susana Pineda was unimpressed by the legal maneuver, which largely rehashed previously made arguments and threw it out of court earlier this month. She levied sanctions against both Hamadeh and his attorney, Ryan Heath, and greenlit attorney's fees requests from defendants in the case. Fontes quickly moved to request the repayment of $36,820 his office spent to mount a defense against the lawsuit. And on Monday, Mays added her own request, seeking to recoup more than $16,600 in attorney's fees. Because Pineda authorized sanctions against Heath and Hamadeh, the two are also subject to a fine of up to $5,000, which under Arizona law is the punishment for filing a lawsuit without substantial justification. In her ruling dismissing Hamadeh's petition, Pineda also rejected a lawsuit filed 2 months earlier in September of 2023 by Cochise County Supervisor Tom Crosby and Arizona voter David Mast. Pineda combined the two cases because Heath was the attorney in both and because the two challenges similarly argued against signature verification processes in Maricopa County, claiming that allegedly unlawful practices should invalidate the results. Signature verification in the state's most populous county has come under repeated fire from GOP politicians who argue that election workers should only be allowed to compare the signature on a person's mail-in ballot to the one submitted when they register to vote. But that argument has consistently failed to sway judges, with Hamadeh's own claims on that front being thrown out of court multiple times, because state law has determined that challenges to how an election is conducted must be launched before the election itself. While Pineda criticized Crosby and Mast for filing a challenge without proving they have a right to contest the results of the 2022 election, she did not immediately punish the duo with sanctions, instead directing Fontes and Mays to make their case for doing so first. In a joint filing on Monday, Fontes and Mays did just that, urging Pineda to apply sanctions against Crosby, Mast, and Heath, and requesting $17,622.50 in attorney's fees. Attorney Karen Hartman Tellez said Crosby, Mast, and Heath had no excuse for not knowing that their challenge would be rejected. Heath must have been aware that other challenges based on the same premise from Hamadeh were rejected, and Crosby and Mast themselves, again represented by Heath, previously unsuccessfully attempted to challenge signature verification processes during failed gubernatorial candidate Kerry Lake's lawsuit. Beyond that, the trio should have recognized that filing a lawsuit almost a year after the fact would be tossed out of court. Plaintiffs and their counsel were well aware that the proper way to challenge the results of an election is an election contest under Arizona law, not a constitutional claim filed nearly a year after the election, Hartman Tellez wrote. The timelines around election contests are strictly governed by state law. Challenges must be filed within 5 days of the statewide canvass, and the trial must begin no later than 15 days afterwards, ensuring that resolutions are reached with as little delay as possible. Hartman Tellez noted that, despite previous court rulings dismissing challenges against signature verification processes, Heath doubled down and spearheaded two lawsuits embodying nearly the same arguments 2 months apart. The costs of fending off the two lawsuits should be repaid, she said, and sanctions should be awarded. Because Heath filed two different cases, which were served on Mays and Fontes approximately 2 months apart, Mays and Fontes needed to fully brief two separate motions to dismiss and address multiple, novel, through legal unsound arguments, she wrote. In an emailed statement, Heath, who is the CEO of a, quote, anti-woke law firm, told the Mirror he's looking forward to appealing the dismissal of both of his cases. Hamadeh's campaign did not respond to a request for comment. And that concludes this first story. Fontes Mays say Hamadeh should fork over more than $50,000 for his latest 2022 election challenge. Our next story. Normally quiet legislative proceedings were anything but last week. The AZ House of Representatives gallery was full of anti-abortion advocates who were vocal in their support of GOP moves to defend an abortion ban. By Leah Britton, University of Arizona Don Bowles Fellow, April 22, 2024. As Republicans in the Arizona House of Representatives devised and executed a plan on April 17th to block Democrats' efforts to repeal the state's 1864 abortion ban, scores of opponents of abortion rights looked on from the gallery above them, eagerly cheering them on. I anticipated the cheering. I was a little bit surprised to the degree, how loud it was. But you're sort of in that place long enough that you learn to tune out the chatter most of the time, Representative Stephanie Stahl Hamilton, a Democrat from Tucson, said. Stahl Hamilton's bill to repeal the 1864 near total ban on abortion has been the center of discussion since the Arizona Supreme Court this month ruled the ban to be enforceable, placing healthcare providers and patients at risk in Arizona. As members of the House reconvened for their weekly session, participants from an anti-abortion demonstration earlier that day crowded the chamber's third-floor gallery to support Republican lawmakers in their efforts to prevent the ban from being repealed. When lawmakers succeeded in doing so for the second week in a row, robust cheers filled the chamber. Though Arizonans support various causes were sprinkled through the audience, the overwhelming majority of those in attendance came to support the missions of anti-abortion groups like Arizona Right to Life and Arizona Women of Action. I do think it's out of step with what most people in Arizona want. I think this is such a loud, small percentage of the population, Stahl Hamilton said. A video circulating on social media showing Republicans on the floor entertaining the applauding crowd has garnered over 2 million views, prompting reactions from abortion rights advocates and Democrats nationwide. This is what Republican leaders believe. This is what they want, to take women's rights all the way back to 1864. Former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said in reaction to the video posted on X. Speaker pro tempore Travis Grantham, as presiding officer of the House, is responsible for enforcing the rules of the House gallery. After the first extensive round of applause from the anti-abortion organizers in attendance, Grantham reminded the gallery of House rules regarding expected decorum. Members and guests who we cherish having here, this would be a very good time to remind everyone there are posted rules in the chamber, Grantham reminded the crowd. I expect the gallery to behave as well, and I expect the members of this body to behave. The Gilbert Republican continued to warn the audience about their behavior multiple times, but did not seek any further action, as he had in the past with audiences that were far less raucous, but ideologically opposed to GOP lawmakers. Representative Nancy Gutierrez is a member of the House Teachers Caucus. In a statement to the Arizona Mirror, the Tucson Democrat recalled Grantham's less tolerant behavior toward teachers' unions that packed the gallery to watch their budgets get cut during past sessions. The gallery on April 17th was reminded three times about the rules. I think that the gallery would have been cleared if it had been an opposing viewpoint being raised. When I was in the gallery during Red for Ed, we weren't even allowed to make a sound, she wrote. This happened again in 2021, when teachers came to watch lawmakers vote on parts of the budget that would have affected education funding. Grantham ordered the gallery be cleared and even reportedly called the Arizona Department of Public Safety because audience members applauded a speech by then-Representative Mitzi Epstein that denounced a GOP effort to limit debate on the floor. However, last week's crowd was not threatened with ejection, even when the audience became particularly boisterous upon a successful motion to recess before Democrats could bring the repeal forward for a vote. During that recess, Stahl Hamilton told the Arizona Mirror that she was approached by members from the gallery audience with a hostile message regarding her efforts to protect Arizona's access to reproductive health care post Roe v. Wade. I believe her words were something like, "You will have to answer to the Lord, Representative Stahl Hamilton," she said. Outside of her work as a lawmaker, Stahl Hamilton is a youth minister. Although she comes from a religious background, the Tucson Democrat said that she feels abortion and the contention that surrounds it underscores the importance of assuring no one religion takes precedence over others when it comes to lawmaking. "That tells me that folks see this as a religious issue," she said. "While many of us may be people of faith, and I think our faith informs how we think, the government has no business using one religion over another to determine the laws." Despite the show of support suggesting otherwise, the Tucson Democrat said she believes there is enough support on both sides of the aisle to strike down the 1864 ban. Even staunch opponents of abortion, like Mesa Republican Representative Jacqueline Parker, recognize that. And with abortion at the forefront of this year's upcoming election, the fight over reproductive health care in Arizona is far from over. "I know with the way the cheering was coming off, it would seem like a moral victory, but we're not done with this issue, and I don't believe that this ban will stay in place," Stahl Hamilton said. And that concludes this story. Normally quiet legislative proceedings were anything but last week. Our next story, U.S. Supreme Court won't take up Carrie Lake's bid to ban ballot counting machines, by Caitlin Sievers, April 22, 2024. The U.S. Supreme Court has shot down Carrie Lake's request to take up her ballot tabulator case that aimed to stop the use of machines to count millions of Arizona ballots. The highest court in the nation did not provide any comment on Monday when it denied the U.S. Senate hopeful's petition to overturn the lower court's decision to throw out her case. Lake and fellow Republican Mark Fincham initially filed the suit in April 2022 while she was running for Arizona governor and he was running for Secretary of State. They alleged that the electronic ballot tabulators used in Maricopa and Pima counties were, quote, hackable, and that the courts should place an injunction on their use ahead of the November 2022 election, and instead force elections officials to count all the ballots by hand. In August 2022, U.S. District Court Judge John Tucci threw out the lawsuit and issued a scathing ruling. He later ordered $122,000 in sanctions against the attorneys in the case, saying that Lake and Fincham's claims amounted to mere conjectural allegations of potential injuries. In October 2023, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals concurred with Tucci's decision to reject the case, agreeing that it was, quote, frivolous. None of the plaintiffs' allegations supported a plausible interference with their individual votes in future elections, will be adversely affected by the use of electronic tabulation, particularly given the robust safeguards in Arizona law, the use of paper ballots, and the post-tabulation retention of those ballots, the appellate court wrote. Fincham and Lake, who both lost their 2022 bids for statewide office to Democrats, each filed lawsuits after that election seeking to overturn the results. In both cases, judges found that neither candidate could prove that there was any fraud, malfeasance, or maladministration that changed the outcome. In their petition to the Supreme Court, Lake and Fincham go as far as to accuse Arizona election officials of illegally altering the tabulator software, a crime under Arizona law, and concealing those alterations from the court when the case was originally filed. They also claimed that Dominion Voting Systems equipment used in Maricopa County and in many other counties across the country have a built-in security breach, enabling malicious actors to take control of elections, likely without detection. Dominion and its software have been the target of right-wing election conspiracy theories for years now, and last spring, Fox News agreed to pay Dominion $787 million over false claims it made about the company's voting equipment. And then on Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court dealt a final blow to the case by declining to hear it. The Arizona Republican Party, alongside the Georgia Republican Party and the Republican State Committee of Delaware, backed up Lake in her petition to SCOTUS, filing their own supporting brief earlier this month, urging the court to take up the case. The Virginia attorney representing the Republican parties, William J. Olson, argued that since 2020, state and federal courts across the U.S. began using what he called unreasonable standards to determine whether election cases have legal standing to move forward. The decision of the District Court of Arizona to dismiss petitioners' challenge to the conduct of the 2022 Arizona election is one of the clearest illustrations of this abusive line of cases, which have required much more than well-pled allegations brought by candidates that elections were being conducted in violation of law, Olson wrote. Neither the Lake campaign nor the Arizona GOP immediately responded to requests for comment on the Supreme Court denial. John J. Martin, a law professor at the University of Virginia School of Law, previously told the Arizona Mirror that he did not expect the High Court to hear the case. I find it highly unlikely that the Supreme Court will grant this writ of certiorari and take up the case, Martin wrote in an email. To do so, four justices would need to vote in favor of granting it. I doubt that there are four justices eager to entertain what can best be described as speculative and conspiratorial allegations brought by Lake and Fincham. And that concludes this story. The U.S. Supreme Court won't take up Kerry Lake's bid to ban ballot counting machines. Our next story, inside the private company Maricopa County depends on to power through the last-minute ballot slog. When 350,000 mail ballots show up on election night 2024, the county and Runbeck Election Services will be better equipped than ever to get them counted. And in the future, Maricopa might not even need the help. This is by Jen Fifield of VoteBeat, April 22, 2024. The bing-bong, bing-bong of the security gate bell rings over the loudspeakers at Runbeck Election Services. Polls in Arizona's presidential preference election closed 3.5 hours ago, and ballots have finally arrived here. The loading dock door flies up, letting in cool spring air, and workers roll in 2 locked cages carrying trays of green envelopes. Soon, the envelopes, with ballots still sealed inside, are shooting through Runbeck's scanner at a rate of 12 per second. Within minutes, the voters' signatures on thousands of envelopes have been scanned. It's fast for a reason. At times, all of America is waiting to find out the results from these ballots, which are cast in the largest swing county in the nation. Dropping off at polling places or in ballot drop boxes on Election Day, these ballots are among the last in Maricopa County to be counted because the voter signatures on the outer envelopes still need to be verified. It often takes days to count the votes inside, with the outcome as an election hinging on the result. In 2020, these ballots were enough to flip the county recorder race for Stephen Richer more than a week after the election. In 2022, these were the ballots candidate Katie Hobbs waited to be counted for days before she declared victory in the governor's race. And this year, these are votes that could help determine who wins Arizona and the presidency. With the volume of these Election Day drop-offs now in the hundreds of thousands, Maricopa County turns to Runbeck, a ballot printing and processing company, out of necessity. If not for the high-speed machines Runbeck owns, it would take the county days, working nonstop, just to do the initial scan of the ballot envelopes. Even after Runbeck is done scanning the envelopes, the actual votes on the ballots still have to be counted. That's done later, back at the county's election headquarters. With all eyes on Arizona for both election results and election integrity, there's growing scrutiny of who handles these last-minute drop-offs, how they are tracked, and how fast they are counted. Complaints about the speed of counting and about ballot tracking have spurred the county and Runbeck to make changes that voters may notice in the upcoming election. To try to speed up counting this year, Maricopa County has spent millions renovating its space to make room for more counting machines and people. Runbeck and the county are working together on other changes to count faster and allow more political party observation. The changes, according to the county's Director of Election Day Voting, Scott Jarrett, are part of the election department's drive for continuous improvement. But larger questions remain. Watching the envelope ballots zip through Runbeck's machine as a GOP observer in the March 19th presidential preference election, Don Hyatt wondered, why is this being outsourced to a private company? Why doesn't the county own this machine? The county has been quietly considering this question as well. For now, it just doesn't have the space to do the work in-house, according to Jarrett and Ray Valenzuela, the county's director of early voting. And even if it had the space, Venezuela said, it would take time for county employees to staff up and gain the skills that Runbeck has. But that may change. In October, county supervisors entered into a $9.8 million contract to design an entirely new election center down the street from the current one. If they approve this design this summer, the county would spend more than $85 million to build the new center in time for the 2028 presidential election. It would allow the fast-growing county to comfortably count the more than 2 million ballots it now receives each presidential election cycle, fit the hundreds of temporary election workers it hires during these elections, and store the equipment it requires. Jarrett and Valenzuela said in a joint phone interview that the new building might also have enough space for the county to take over the ballot envelope scanning work Runbeck currently does. The speed of ballot counting is a politically charged issue, especially in swing states like Arizona. Concerns that began in earnest in 2020 over how long it took Maricopa County to finish counting the presidential election results grew dramatically in 2022 as Hobbs and GOP opponent Kari Lake awaited their results. Lake's claim that the county was intentionally slow-rolling the results to perpetrate election fraud attracted national attention. The fact is, many large voting jurisdictions take a week or more to tabulate mail ballots, but depending on the volume of those ballots and the overall margins in the race, that wait doesn't raise many concerns because the outcome of the race doesn't hinge on those votes. In swing states like Arizona, these lingering, last-to-be-counted ballots command much greater attention. Statewide races here have become tighter in recent elections, and the number of voters waiting until Election Day to drop off their ballots has grown, leaving a larger percentage of the state's results outstanding on election night. By 2022, nearly 1 in 5 voters cast their ballot this way. That's about 290,000 ballot envelopes to scan, voter signatures to verify, envelopes to open, and ballots to count. Lake's allegations drew more attention to the long wait in 2022, but Maricopa County was actually counting just about as fast as it typically does. County officials posted the final results 13 days after the 2022 election, roughly in line with the average of 12.5 days in statewide elections since 2006. The counting timeline has not increased, even as the number of cast votes has doubled. Still, county officials started looking into how to further speed up the process. The county has spent millions since 2022 tearing down walls in its counting room and other spaces within its election center. It's also set up trailers as temporary buildings for use during elections. The space can now fit considerably more people to work in the areas where there were bottlenecks, Jarrett said. In the upcoming election, the number of workstations available for verifying voter signatures on the mail ballots will be 45, nearly double the 25 stations available in 2022. There will be 75 workstations for processing boards, the 2-member bipartisan teams who open ballot envelopes to prepare ballots for counting, up from 55 in 2022. And there will be twice as many bipartisan teams reviewing voter selections on ballots where machines can't determine the voter's intent. The county doubled the number of high-speed ballot counting machines at its central counting location, too, meaning that it can tabulate votes twice as fast. On Runbeck's end, it plans to have enough staff on election night to run 2 or even 3 of its high-speed scanning machines at once. Even with these changes, Jarrett and Valenzuela are hesitant to make promises about how much faster, if at all, counting may go this year. It all depends on how many people wait until Election Day to vote. And Jarrett is estimating Election Day ballot drop-offs will increase from about 290,000 in 2022 to 350,000 in 2024. In Arizona, polls close at 7 p.m. Typically, it's 9 p.m. or later when the first shipment of Maricopa County Election Day drop-offs make it to Runbeck. Before that, poll workers need to pack the ballots up at 200 or more voting locations, and county workers need to pick them up from drop boxes and bring them to the county's central counting facility. Under camera surveillance and with bipartisan observers, workers arrange the envelopes face forward in trays. Then the trays are packed in cages with locks and rolled onto trucks waiting outside the warehouse. As all that happens, it's mostly quiet in the Runbeck warehouse, located down a winding road in an industrial area near Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport. Runbeck, one of the largest ballot printers in the nation, will print ballots here for 49 counties across the country in 2024 and ship more than 13 million ballots directly to voters. But on election night, only Maricopa County's cast ballots will come through here. The night of the presidential preference election, Runbeck workers eat pizza in the break room and watch a movie as they wait for the envelopes to arrive. On a whiteboard near the wall, near the envelope scanning machine, employees have written down guesses of how many ballot envelopes there will be for them. The guesses can range widely, and no one has ever gotten exactly right, said Senior Vice President of Operations Brian Dandoran. Tonight, one guess is 10,000, another is 48,729. When the ballots do arrive, the warehouse starts buzzing. Observers from each party follow the caged ballots from the truck loading zone to the envelope scanners, each 80 feet long and 6 feet high. Security guards from Runbeck and Maricopa County watch over the envelopes at every step. Multiple workers confirm ballot transfer numbers at multiple steps. Once the signature and barcode on about 10,000 ballot envelopes are scanned, Runbeck sends the county a file with the photos. County workers then use those photos to start comparing voter signatures with registration records. If workers end up challenging a signature, Runbeck uses the machines to separate those envelopes into separate trays before they are returned to the county. In all, about 30,000 envelopes come through the warehouse on the night of the presidential preference election, right in the middle of the range of guesses on the whiteboard. Maricopa County picks up the ballots from Runbeck after they are scanned, opens the envelopes, and counts the votes inside once they are back at its central counting facility. Seeing all of these security protocols in place at Runbeck in person for the first time, Democratic Party observer Ed Geibel said he was even more confident in the process and even more disturbed by the wild claims he has heard about widespread voting fraud. It's not like you can inject 5,000 ballots into the process, Geibel said. Yet, that's effectively what Lake alleged in 2022. And while there has been no physical evidence to support that claim, the allegation has forced Runbeck and the county to take even more steps to increase transparency. In 2022, Lake's legal team noticed that on ballot tracking documents, the county had recorded an incorrect estimate of Election Day mail ballot drop-offs before the ballots were shipped to Runbeck. The county hadn't even counted the exact number of these ballots before shipping them to Runbeck, and historically never has. Instead, it has estimated the number of ballots it was sending to the warehouse based on the number of trays they packed. But Lake said in court that the incorrect estimate was proof that there were tens of thousands of ballots illegally inserted at this facility. Also, a witness told the judge that Runbeck employees had been casting ballots on site. Courts repeatedly rejected Lake's claim for lack of evidence, and her attorneys were eventually sanctioned for falsely claiming that it was a, quote, undisputed fact that 35,563 ballots were injected to the results at Runbeck. Jeff Ellington, CEO of Runbeck, has since told VoteBeat these claims have led to harassment and threats against him. But Dandoran said that their employees have been mostly isolated from all of this. He talks in great length about the efforts that Runbeck takes to hire employees who call out errors when they see them and understand the importance of integrity when processing ballot envelopes. Yet the pressure to tighten processes hasn't let up. After the 2022 election, State Representative Alexander Culloden and State Senator Wendy Rogers, both Republicans, led an investigation committee into the legislature that pushed Runbeck to provide greater transparency into its process. Earlier this year, Runbeck signed an agreement with state lawmakers to provide for more transparency in ballot tracking and political party observer rules. The ballot tracking forms now make clear when numbers are estimates and when they are exact machine counts. There will be more political party observers allowed, and these observers will have access to a room where they can watch TV screens that show all ballot activity in the building live. And Runbeck will no longer allow employees to cast their own ballots on site, Dandoran said. Also, under a new law, poll workers will try to get an exact count of the number of these ballots on site at their location before they are transferred to the county for sorting, then to Runbeck for scanning. Culloden pushed for this new rule, hoping it would avoid the incorrect county estimates, but election officials worry that any inaccuracies will lead to more fraud claims. Colladan said that after his investigation, he is a lot less concerned about Runbeck than he was before, and he is glad Runbeck agreed on new transparency measures. Eyes on the process is always the best way to avoid problems, he said. Still, Colladan said many of his constituents are concerned that the ballots they cast go through Runbeck afterward. He sees few good arguments for doing the work in-house. Involving Runbeck in the chain of custody creates more opportunities for errors or bad actors, he said. He's also concerned that private contractors can more easily push back against public record laws. Indeed, in 2022, a judge denied a public records request from an advocacy organization allied with Lake to force Runbeck to turn over security footage. Runbeck has since agreed to let lawmakers review its video. Colladan said if the county did the ballot scanning work instead, there would be better legal teeth for oversight for ordinary members of the public. As concerns about Runbeck circulated in the public this summer, Jarrett said election staff studied if Maricopa County could take on the work of scanning the ballot envelopes. Right now, Maricopa County pays Runbeck 98 cents per ballot for its scanning services. The high-speed machines cost about $1 million each, according to Runbeck, and the county would need a few. The county would also need staff and money on hand for machine maintenance and skilled staff to operate the machines. The county has always been planning to continue to expand its election space, even after the renovations it just finished. This summer, around the time it was evaluating if it could replace Runbeck for ballot scanning, it decided it should build an entirely new building in order to accommodate all its future needs. The new building, if approved, would double the amount of space the county has available for elections and allow the recorder's office early voting team to move in. Each day, more than 150 people move to Maricopa County, making it one of the nation's fastest-growing counties and pushing its rolls of registered voters toward 2.4 million. About 79% of voters are on the early voting list to receive ballots by mail, up from 40% in 2016. Only a few places in the country see as many mail ballots, but some California jurisdictions compare, including Los Angeles and Orange counties. In 2007, Orange County's then Registrar of Voters, Neil Kelly, decided to take the county's entire ballot printing and scanning process in-house after growing frustrated with mistakes the county's ballot printer was making. He purchased the same high-speed scanner that Runbeck uses to scan envelopes. He said taking it all in-house allowed the county to gain more control over timing, but it came with challenges. He ended up needing to staff a machine maintenance manager year-round, and his election center became a parts warehouse as he tried to keep the machines in working order. Los Angeles County, which is larger than Maricopa County, with 5 million registered voters, owns 6 or 7 high-speed envelope scanners, said spokesperson Mike Sanchez. It takes between 12 to 20 people to staff those machines, most of them seasonal, temporary employees, with permanent staff supervising. But in California, there isn't the same pressure to count the wave of Election Day ballots quickly. State law allows voters to put their ballots in the mail right up to Election Day and still have them be counted when the counties receive them. Counting runs for weeks after the election, Sanchez said. In Maricopa County, the new facility being designed would help ease some bottlenecks in the ballot handling process. But county spokesperson Fields Mosley said he wouldn't want to promise faster counting because of it. Taking Runbeck scanning work in-house wouldn't necessarily make ballot processing faster either, Jarrett and Valenzuela said. It would just put everything under one roof, making the process more efficient and transparent. It might cut out the 15-minute trips the ballots make back and forth to Runbeck, they said, but the process still has to start with sorting and scanning envelopes, no matter where it happens. Finding skilled staff is another challenge, a point emphasized by both Kelly in Orange County and Dan Duran at Runbeck. Few workers have experience handling ballots, they said, which requires more integrity than working in other mail or printing businesses. Maricopa County already struggles to find enough temporary workers during busy election cycles, and taking this work in-house would mean finding more each year and more willing to work odd hours. At Runbeck, workers take their, quote, lunch break at midnight when work on machine pauses for a required daily reboot. These workers won't be done with their shift until just before the sun comes up. And that concludes this story. Inside the private company Maricopa County depends on to power through the last-minute ballot slog. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Our next story, Republicans on Oversight Committee accuse AG Chris Mayes of, quote, shilling for Planned Parenthood. The basis for the claim is that she has criticized anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers. By Caitlin Sievers, April 18, 2024. The Arizona House Republicans, heading the Committee on Executive Oversight, made some wild allegations against Democratic Attorney General Chris Mayes during a Wednesday meeting. Among numerous other claims, some GOP members of the committee accused her of colluding with Planned Parenthood to drive more women to their clinics to obtain abortions in an effort to bolster their bottom line. And Chairwoman Jacqueline Parker, a Republican from Mesa, was one of several lawmakers who said they believed that was May's intent when she published a consumer alert telling women that crisis pregnancy centers misrepresent their services. Crisis pregnancy centers are operated by anti-abortion groups and don't offer abortions, but provide other services like ultrasounds and free diapers and car seats. But Mayes accused them of tricking women into coming to their clinics and then pressuring them not to have abortions. While some crisis pregnancy centers don't provide medical care, others have OBGYNs and nurses on staff to provide services throughout pregnancy. The representatives of crisis pregnancy centers, including Choices Pregnancy Centers and Life Choices Women's Clinic, who attended Wednesday's meeting, adamantly denied that. The committee seems to be basing the allegation against Mayes on testimony from several leaders of crisis pregnancy centers who were clearly angered by the consumer alert. None of them claimed to have direct knowledge or evidence of any collusion between Planned Parenthood and Mayes. Parker accused Mayes of using taxpayer resources to uplift the abortion industry, which is very, very alarming. Richie Taylor, a spokesman for Mayes, told the Arizona Mirror that the allegations were ridiculous. These comments from Representative Parker are outrageous and absolutely unacceptable from a member of the legislature, Taylor wrote in an email. There is zero truth to her assertions. Attorney General Mayes is committed to ensuring Arizonans can access reproductive health care. Representative Parker, on the other hand, was key in blocking the repeal of a law that will harm women's health and could very well lead to deaths. Representative Parker should retract her baseless comments and apologize to Attorney General Mayes. But Parker wasn't the only legislator on the committee that made those allegations. It seems to be obvious to me that she is shilling for Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry and using that in her legal practice against the people of the state of Arizona, said Representative John Gillette, a Republican from Kingman. During the meeting, Garrett Riley, executive director of the Arizona Life Coalition, a nonprofit that supports crisis pregnancy centers and promotes the anti-abortion movement in general, accused Mayes of spreading misinformation about crisis pregnancy centers. The attorney general seems misinformed or intent on damaging our reputation, Riley said. None of the centers I know use misleading tactics. But he countered those claims with his own about Planned Parenthood. Organizations like Planned Parenthood are substantially financially motivated to push and sell abortions, Riley said. The main goal of abortion centers is to persuade patients to have abortions. Arizona law requires providers to make multiple disclosures to patients at least 24 hours prior to them obtaining an abortion, including the, quote, probable anatomical and physiological characteristics of the fetus when the procedure is scheduled to be performed. He also claimed that Planned Parenthood has abortion quotas, something that the organization has denied for years. Planned Parenthood of Arizona says that abortions account for less than 10% of the services it provides, in addition to birth control, testing for sexually transmitted infections, and things like pap tests. House Speaker Ben Thoma created the Committee on Executive Oversight on March 26th, specifically to investigate allegations of the abuse of power, dereliction of duty, and/or malfeasance. The committee was tasked with investigating Mays and other state officials to recommend potential legislation and to deter partisan abuse and weaponization of the Office of Attorney General or other state offices. Hours before the Committee on Executive Oversight hosted its first meeting on April 4th, Mays called the panel a sham and told reporters that Republicans were wasting taxpayer money in an effort to distract from her office's accomplishments. None of the Democratic representatives assigned to the committee have attended its two meetings so far, with the House's number two Democrat, Oscar De Los Santos, calling the committee a, quote, joke. The Republican legislators on the committee are looking into a wide range of Mays' activities as Attorney General, including a series of town hall meetings she hosted in rural Arizona, during which she gathered evidence for a possible public nuisance lawsuit against foreign companies that she says are overpumping groundwater. The committee is also investigating what they call Mays' targeting of Cochise County officials and their handling of elections. She has indicted GOP county supervisors for their failure to certify the 2022 election on time, as well as what the committee characterized as threats she made against the Mojave County Board of Supervisors for considering hand-counting ballots in this year's election. Mays sent the Mojave County supervisors a letter in November just before they were set to vote on a hand count for 2024, informing them that state law doesn't give them the authority to order a full hand count. The majority of Wednesday's meeting was taken up with stories from heads of crisis pregnancy centers, as well as parents of girls who participate in school sports, who are angry over Mays' refusal to defend in court Arizona's 2022 ban on transgender girls playing on the sports team that align with their gender identity. The AG said the law was unconstitutional and she wouldn't defend it. That law is not currently being enforced amidst a court challenge filed by two transgender athletes. The committee has sent Mays multiple public record requests to gather evidence in its investigation, but has not received the records it has requested, Parker said. And that concludes this story. Republicans on Oversight Committee accuse AG Chris Mays of shilling for Planned Parenthood. Next up, Austin Smith drops re-election campaign amid accusations of petition signature fraud, by Caitlin Sievers, April 18, 2024. Republican State Representative Austin Smith has dropped his re-election bid after being accused of personally forging more than 100 petition signatures to get on the 2024 ballot. And he's facing a possible criminal investigation into his signatures after state election officials forwarded his petition signatures to the Arizona Attorney General's office. Smith is first-term representative from Surprise, a member of Arizona's far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus, and a top official at Turning Point Action, the campaign arm of the far-right Turning Point USA, which is aimed at young Republicans and run by Charlie Kirk. Ironically, Smith is also a member of the House's Municipal Oversight and Elections Committee, where he decried unproven election fraud in Maricopa County and has even made jokes accusing county officials of mail-in ballot signature fraud on social media. Signature verification in Maricopa County is a joke, Smith wrote on Twitter in May 2023. But Smith's own petition to get on the July 30th Republican primary ballot was filled with more than 100 signatures, along with corresponding addresses that obviously looked like they were all written by the same person. and two of his supposed petition signers told the court in statements submitted along with a lawsuit challenging his nominating petitions that they never signed the petition. Smith announced that he was dropping out of the race on Thursday, just days after the signature challenge was filed by Democratic precinct committeeman Jim Aschertz. In the announcement, Smith called the allegations against him ludicrous and accused Democrats of creating a coordinated attack against him with press releases and social media posts about the legal challenge to his candidacy. If they could convince a judge that any one signature was forged, all of my signatures would be invalidated, and I would get kicked off the ballot, Smith wrote. And as per Arizona law, I would also be banned from seeking office for 5 years. Smith took no accountability for the allegedly fraudulent signatures and said he didn't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars defending himself in the civil elections challenge, as well as a possible criminal case for forgery, because he didn't want that to impact his new wife. We have our plans and aspirations, and none of them involve starting out tens of thousands of dollars in debt as a once of being involved in public service, he wrote. But Republican Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richard tweeted on Thursday that if the signatures were valid, the county would put out a report saying so, costing Smith nothing. Smith went on to say that when he runs for office in the future, he'll exclusively use the online petition signature system so that no one can make up any stories. But while Smith was excoriated by the Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, they were not the ones who went after him for his alleged behavior. Maricopa County Supervisor Clint Heckman, a Republican, called Smith out in a Thursday statement, saying he should resign his seat in the House of Representatives immediately and calling for an investigation into Smith's signatures. An investigation will reveal the truth, but this episode tells us something about those who have spread falsehoods with such ease since the 2020 election, Heckman wrote. They can't comprehend that most Americans and Arizonans are honest people. They accuse others of dishonesty so easily because they have no qualms about lying to win a political race or a business deal. Well, I will always tell the people the truth, and Austin Smith should leave public service now. Smith was one of the many Arizona Republicans who claimed that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from former President Donald Trump, and says on his campaign site that he was involved in the partisan audit of the race, which never uncovered any fraud. What happened on November 3, 2020, in Maricopa County continues to be a national disgrace and embarrassment, Smith wrote on his website. Not only that, Austin believes it was criminal and will fight every day in the state legislature to hold those responsible to account. The Arizona Secretary of State, Democrat Adrian Fontes, has already forwarded the allegations of forgery and fraud against Smith to the Attorney General's office, along with 12 other election petition signature cases. Shortly after Smith announced he was dropping out of the race, the ADLCC criticized him for his decision not to defend his actions in court. Arizona voters deserve the same accountability, transparency, and elections integrity that Smith has long claimed to champion, Democrat Senator Priya Sundaresan, co-chair of the ADLCC, said in a statement. And that concludes this story. We should also note that this article includes a list of the Arizona House of Representatives 2024 candidates, as well as the Arizona Senate candidates. And it describes each party, the minimum signatures required, and how many signatures they filed. And that concludes this story. Austin Smith drops re-election campaign amid accusations of petition signature fraud. In the time we have left, we have just a few short updates for you. The first is Hobbs vetoes anti-trans shower bill. Republicans accuse Democrats of a, quote, war against women, by Caitlin Sievers, April 23, 2024. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs pulled out her veto stamp again to strike down another GOP anti-transgender bill aimed at banning trans students from using school showers designated for the gender that aligns with their identity. Hobbs has not been shy about using her veto power, with 52 vetoes of Republican-backed bills so far this year, including 10 more on Tuesday. Hobbs repeatedly promised she would reject any anti-LGBTQ legislation. And in another story, May's AZ Supreme Court abortion ban ruling is wrong and should be reconsidered by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, April 23, 2024. Attorney General Chris Mays is calling on the Arizona Supreme Court to reconsider its decision to revive a near-total ban on abortions from 1864, saying that the court's reasoning for doing so is irreparably flawed. 2 weeks ago, when the Arizona Supreme Court ruled a near-total ban on abortion passed more than a century ago, when the state was still a territory, supersedes a more recent 15-week gestational ban passed in 2022. The 1864 law threatens doctors who provide an abortion for any reason other than to save a woman's life with a mandatory 2 to 5 year prison sentence. On Tuesday, Mays, a staunch reproductive rights advocate who ran on a campaign to protect abortion access, argued in a motion to reconsider that the court's opinion in the case should be at minimum rewritten. The logic underpinning the court's majority opinion relies on a legally unsound premise that threatens to undermine years of settled case law and conflicts with federal rulings, Mays wrote to the justices. And that's all the time that we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, thanking you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again next week.